And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 791. Picking up where we left off last week, talking starting pitchers for 2026 based on the early steamer projections using Z-scores and other cool stuff that my co-host put together to kind of help us dig in and see, you know, are they a potential perceived, as he likes to say, value or not as we go through early draft season. Get to that and much, much more. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BreakingBen_T Bented. How are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. Yeah, it feels like I'm dealing with what you and Ryan do, because Thursday last week we recorded, and now we're back at it Tuesday.
Yep. So bang, bang.
Getting a taste of the life in Bubba. But yeah, I'm doing well. And the perceived value is always funny, because people always say, look how far the so-and-so fell. But then, like I showed with the Patreon article I did, sometimes ADP is way off, so you can think you're getting a value, but maybe you're not. So it's all speculation.
Yeah, ADP can be off. We've done reviews on projections. They're like almost 50-50 is what it came out to. So it's like there's so many things we can dig into. In the end, we have to hope the player we pick actually performs. That's the bottom line. And we use these tools to try to hopefully point us in the right direction. But as you, me, and many others know, it is not always the case when we're doing this. But just quick initial thoughts. I didn't put an outline together, but it just dawned on me. Any thoughts on Josh Naylor sticking with Seattle for 5 years?
That's pretty good, I think. It seems like they probably like them. And I wonder if the Steels will stay. I don't know how much of a team thing that was. Well, they do have Randy. They have J-Rod. No one else really steals that much, though. So I don't know if it's not really a team thing necessarily, like we'd say with the Reds or the Nationals, but whatever happened there worked for him. So maybe you can project a little bit more than like 10 steals that one day we were talking about Naylor. I think that's what Steamer has him for. So I wouldn't expect more than that, but I guess there's a little more ceiling with his steals total.
And then a couple Yankees questions. First off, Ryan Yarbrough back. Got to be excited, huh? Just kidding.
He's one of those boring guys that you're going to need at some point. He's going to be a long man. He's going to be a spot starter. So it's a good baseball move. So I'm fine with that.
It's a good baseball move. And it's a move 100% that I know I will have him streaming at some point this season for like a dollar. I know that for a fact. It happens every year with Yarbrough. What do you have, like 7 or 8 wins last year? Like, he has windows where he's much better in real life. He's serviceable. He got those wins because he piggybacked stuff like that. But he finds his way, especially in deeper formats, into fantasy goodness. He will at some point in time.
Not a bad DC target late.
Uh-huh, exactly. It's been a big topic of conversation on the Discord. We won't cover all those today, but with a lot of guys getting DFA'd or guys added to the 40-man, those are the kind of guys if they're added to the 40-man, they're that much closer to getting a call-up at some time, and we know how that goes when you're speculating extremely deep. As Ben signed up for his first draft, folks, it's in February, but he has signed up for his first draft, so let's get going on that train. The other one, the more important one here.
I will draft before February, though, so everyone knows.
I know. I just had to joke. Ben got me and Ryan all excited in our group chat. He texts us and goes, hey, I signed up for my first DC. And I'm like, oh, sweet. When is it? February. All right. Never mind.
But besides that, I did buy my DCs. So the one that Bubba's mentioning is the 500 DC auction that the NFBC offers, which is my first year trying it. I've heard pretty great things about it. I know people that I think James Anderson's one who always talks about it, how much he loves it, and I think Rob DiPietro does it too. Usually it's only two that are open right now, so it's a pretty limited opening, so I figured might as well just hop in and secure my spot. So
shameless plug, if you don't want to spend $500 and battle those guys in an auction, which it'd be fun, challenging but fun, we are going to have a couple in the Patreon, if you're a Patreon member at Bubba the Bloom, much more affordable later on to get your auctioning feet wet before the listener leagues will be coming up towards the end of February. Just want to throw that out there as something that is in the pipeline. I've actually talked to NFBC people in Arizona and recently, so we are moving in the right direction there. The more important name that I want to ask you about is Trent Grisham's back, baby. He accepted his qualifying offer, 34 home run. Trent Grisham's back. There's obviously a lot can still change. It's November 18th. He can be traded for all we know. Highly doubtful, but he could be. But like the Bellinger return, Jason Dominguez was supposed to play like every day. Like there's a million moving parts here. How do you feel about this as a Yankees fan?
Well, I guess the If I was going to be upset, it would have been when they extended the qualifying offer to Grisham originally, because all he had to do was accept it or decline it at this point. I guess it makes sense that he took the $20 million. I think it's like $22 million as a qualifying offer this year.
Yeah,
which compared to what Grisham has made in his career, he's definitely more than doubled what he's made, I'm sure. So from that angle, I guess it makes sense for him to take it. I guess I think he liked New York. The fans definitely liked him when he was like hitting homers out of nowhere. But yeah, so I had to pull up Roster Resource just to kind of get my footing on the situation, because yeah, you mentioned Jason Dominguez, and he's been the Yankees' top prospect for a long time now. And if I took him in a DC last year, Dominguez, and it was frustrating because I would have to play him and he'd get like three at bats in a scoring period because Grisham emerged. I forget even how. I think Grisham was just like filling in and he's kept hitting, and then they just finally started playing him all the time, and then he's kept hitting. And I don't trust Grisham to do it again as a Yankee fan or even in fantasy necessarily. I do recall we talked about Grisham in the projection recap because of how good his projected stats on a per at-bat basis were. And he had some pretty good underlying metrics even in 2024 before going into last season, Grisham did. But it feels like they're going to re-sign Bellinger. And if they do, I think that means Dominguez isn't going to play anymore or won't be projected to play again, unless I think someone on the Discord mentioned, yeah, unless they trade Wells, because if they want to play Dominguez and Bellinger, if they re-sign them, that means Ben Rice can't play first. And that means he has to go back to catcher, but I'd rather have Ben Rice at first for fantasy and probably as a Yankee fan as well. So I don't know. I think they should have just taken the goal they got with Grisham last year and left it at that, but they got greedy with the qualifying offer. Now they have to probably sit with it for a year, and hopefully it works out well for the Yankees, but I feel like it's kind of a unnecessary risk that they didn't have to take.
You know, I feel like they took it because if for some reason he didn't take the offer and wanted to get a multi-year deal, which I think it was like a 50-50 shot. You know, you had that big season. We talked about it with Trent Grisham before. It seems pretty crazy. This dude's 29 years old, so he's still like not that old yet. And he could try to get like a 3 or 4 year deal. And if he were to get that, then the Yankees get a draft pick. And so that's where like the game behind the game kind of comes into it, the business side of it. But Trent took the offer. Maybe he realized that was the best case scenario, was playing in Yankee Stadium for him. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because you mentioned all the moving parts involved there. This seems like an optimal time to trade Chason Dominguez and try to get something for him. I know the value is not as high as it once was, but this feels like we're going down the Clint Frazier rabbit hole all over again. I think Chason's much better. Don't get me wrong. But at that same time, Clint Frazier was once expected to be this elite talent, you know, and a lot of moving pieces were involved there. So it feels like there's a chance with the Yankees maybe trading for us. We'll talk about later in the show with Freddie Peralta or something, that Jason Dominguez could be a piece in some kind of pitching trade as well.
And I'll add, what you said about the qualifying offer makes sense is that you get the draft pick, but you do that with someone like Pete Alonso like a stud that you know you're going to pay them more if you end up re-signing them than what the qualifying offer is worth. Grisham is getting more than he probably would have got per year on the market anyway, so that's why he took it. But yeah. I don't know. Like I always say, the Yankees think they're smarter than they actually are a lot of the times. And when I say that, I think Cashman thinks he's smarter than he is a lot there of the time. Go. And then
yes.
The team takes the hit for his arrogance. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah, the combination, I'll leave it at this. You don't have to get tortured by it anymore. The combination of Cashman's arrogance and Boone's arrogance, it's like two magnets that are never going to connect. It just makes it's a whole ripple effect of bad things. If you take it into physics class, folks, like eventually it's going to explode. That's how this is going to go. It's because they're just two guys that want to be the head honchos, and both of them can't make the right moves right now. So time is up, as some people might say in this world, but the talent and the bankroll still there enough to keep the Yankees relevant, because they always will be relevant, would be in the New York Yankees. All right. Enough of that. We'll have more news and notes as things go on, because moves are happening pretty rapidly as guys are getting going here. Holiday season, you'll see some pushes for trades and whatnot by the end of the week, most likely, if not next week. So we'll keep you updated there, but let's get to some of this, Ben. Let's talk some Steamer projections and how our thoughts are on some of them, like last week was, well, there's no way DeGrom's throwing this many innings. These guys, a loose way of saying what we said, but like we were talking, you know, the strikeout predictions and all these other things with certain pitchers and kind of where we stand on these, because then you have the Z score and how that pans out to ADP, because we were seeing certain pitchers are going much later than we thought they would go, or other pitchers going super early. ADP still very recency biased as well right now, so keep that in mind. I recommend the ADP tracker that Bloomfield put together. It's kind of sneaky. Keeps you up to date on everything going on in all those drafts. But we went over the top 18 pitchers according to Steamer last week, Ben. I wanted to stop there because the next names on the board get real, real interesting here. We start off with a lefty on the Dodgers, Blake Snell. He has an ADP of around 58 right now. He's been going around that range all the draft season. Right now, he is the 19th pitcher off the board and 58th overall, not at the pitching position, folks. Keep that in mind. Blake Snell is projected for 173 innings, Ben. 212 strikeouts. I'm just going to leave it there because I think we know Blake Snell's track record on innings pitched. And 173, he's done twice in his entire career. And when he does that, yes, Ben, the strikeouts are phenomenal. But he doesn't do that. So what are your thoughts on this projection?
Yeah, it's pretty optimistic for sure. The underlying numbers for Snell looked great last year when he did pitch. The only thing that was really an issue was the walk rate. And with that is the ball rate as well. They're both pretty a little elevated compared to what you like to see from a starter. But that's kind of always been the thing with Blake Snell, is that he'll get a ton of Ks, but he will walk batters. And I remember people debating on podcasts about whether he like chose to walk people because he didn't want to give in or something kind of wild, which I don't know how smart Blake Snell is, but if you're going to walk people, it means you're just throwing more pitches, and that's why you can't go as deep in the game. So I don't know what his end goal is. If he's actually trying to walk people, it doesn't really make sense in my mind, but that's whatever. But the swing strike rate was awesome, 15% last year. His exit velocity again was only 86 miles per hour. He had a great chase rate, missed a ton of bats in the zone. The exit was 307. So when he pitched, Snell was great. He did kind of hurt one of my main events, so I have that in the back of my mind. But yeah, so the other time he hit 180 was 2018, and they did that in 2023. I'm gonna check out his ADP with the tracker. You said it was like 50 something, right? Yeah, like 57.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. He that'll be some people's SP1. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's got to be my SP2, which I think is how I drafted Snell last year when I took him, was an SP2. And going back to the projection, the whip, I mentioned the walk rate. The 125 whip is the highest that we've seen so far for the starters we mentioned. The next highest was Max Fried, surprisingly, and Cease was actually lower than Snell's 1.22 versus Snell's 1.25. But Snell, he has like a similar projection to, I'm going to bring up again, Cole Reagans in terms of innings and Ks, but Reagans has the better projected ratios.
And a much higher ADP.
Yep, and I think it makes sense that Reagans would have a better whip if he is fully healthy. So Snell as the 19th overall pitcher, 18th starter per Steamer right now. Mm-hmm. That's definitely an SP2, but I don't know if he's actually going there. It's on the fence, but I think he's getting drafted a little high right now.
Yeah, he's going a little high. You have to be on that aggressive pitching build, basically, like you said, to be your SP2. You go almost pocket aces here and hope that works. It's kind of ironic. The first pitcher we talk about, we're already comparing to Cole Reagans, who I think we did the whole entire last episode about, because
I was waiting all 4 days to do that.
Yeah, because the projections just love Reagans, and the ADP does not at this point in time. And that'll be interesting to see how that kind of pans out at the end of the season, obviously, with the Reagans love. The other reason, well, there's many reasons I wanted to stop at that line, is we had Blake Snell, ADP around 57, 58. The pitcher right after him, Ben, is almost the consensus SP4, according to many right now. Yoshinobu Yamamoto has an ADP of 25.6 on the year. He's gone as high as 18 in some draft champions drafts so far, as low as 30. So he's gone by the end of the second round in DCs. That's a done deal. Yamamoto is the 20th pitcher, according to the Steamer projections, 19th starting pitcher. Like, he's basically right behind, he's right behind Blake Snell, who's going 25, 30 picks later right now. Yamamoto's projected for 161 innings, so fewer than Blake Snell. 173 Ks, 3.42 ERA, 1.19 whip. He's coming off an elite season. He threw 173 innings, which was great, after a 90 innings in 2024. We saw the 2.49 ERA that went with good 3.32 Sierra indicator, which is awesome. We saw almost 30% strikeout rate, been a 20.8% K to walk, a 0.99 whip. He's got a better whip in both of his two seasons than they're projecting him for right now. I guess it comes down to, do you believe he's good for another 173 innings?
I think that's a good target, because luckily Fangraphs has Yamamoto's Japanese stats, and he did hit 193 innings 2 years in a row, 2021, 2022. So he has it in him. This is his third season now, 2025 was, of 170 or more. So it's definitely in the cards. And the one thing is, well, one of the things is looking at his game started, and Yamamoto only had 30 last year. And I think the Dodgers are going to keep him from getting as many starts as a normal starter would, because I think he goes 5 days rest a lot, if not every time, Yamamoto, and that's going to keep his innings down. And I think that's why he is showing up where he is on this list. He is starter 19, I believe. And yeah, if there's discussion about him being the SP4 and he's projected as the 19th starter, I think we have to take a step back and reconsider if we truly think that he should be the SP4. Because with Yamamoto, a lot of it was fueled by the playoffs, because everyone's watching and it's the Dodgers, and he had at least two, I think, really dominant outings in the playoffs. So that's going to drive the price up, especially when everyone's drafting while the World Series is going on. That's when it's all started. And the one thing too is his swing strike rate was below 13%, which doesn't really match up with the 29.4% K rate that he had last year. He is nasty, Yamamoto, but it's just the lack of the workhorse volume that other guys going up the top of the draft board would get, and then the lower swing strike rate. I don't think I'll be having him as my SP4 when it comes time to do my rankings, but he's still a great pitcher. I just don't think it's a slam dunk of a thing to have him as the fourth starter off the board.
Yeah, I like Yamamoto a ton. I've said it last year, and I'll say it again this year, pretty much all season. I like the Dodgers pitchers a lot. I have to get him a discount because I know they're going to get extra time to rest, unless there's just a slew of injuries, which allows guys to pitch a ton of innings. You're going to see, like you mentioned, Yamamoto, like every 5 days, Glasnow's going to get his time to rest. Snell, like there's going to be a lot of that, let alone the injury histories to begin with, that might be legit injuries with these guys. To pay that ADP, that concern has to be in the back of my mind. That's just where it comes down to with other pitchers going around him. Because you made a point before the postseason hype, Logan Gilbert was like the SP4 everybody wanted. Logan Gilbert's a horse, and he got hurt this last year for the first time, still put together some big innings. So it's like, do you go Gilbert versus Yamamoto? That's still the discussion. I like Yamamoto overall over Gilbert, but to trust him to throw every 5 days, probably Gilbert, weirdly enough. So problem is I won't likely draft either one of them because that's not my style. But yeah, there is this next guy though, Ben. He's going 6 picks after Yamamoto, ADP of 31.4, and that is one Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown is projected for 184 innings, 200 strikeouts, a 3.64 ERA, and a 1.23 whip, which all sounds really great, especially for a guy that's made 29 or more starts in 3 straight seasons. He's upped his innings each season. Ratios have been great the last 2 seasons, 2.43 this last year to be precise, with a 1.03 whip. I've always loved Hunter Brown. You're not as favored as I am on Hunter Brown. What do you think of these projections, though, for Hunter Brown?
I think it puts him down a little bit compared to where he's been taken in drafts, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's ADP's 30. He's the 5th pitcher off the board right now.
Yeah, so I guess this 2 guys in a row, we had the SP4 and the SP5 getting knocked down a little bit. Really, it's same thing with Snell for Brown. It's the whip. Brown's projected for a 1.23 whip, which will not help you as your ace. The 200 Ks is also a lot. I think they're kind of just looking at they being seamers, they're looking at his K rate, which was 28.3%. And similar thing with Brown that I said for Yamamoto, but even worse for Brown, is that his swinging strike rate was only 11.3%, which is probably, even for starters, it's probably below average. And this is kind of why I compared him to Mitch Keller, was because Keller was getting all these gaudy strikeout numbers, but his swinging strike rate never really supported it. And that's what I saw with Brown going into last year based on his 2024 stats. And he still kind of maintained the K rate despite having the, I'm not sure what it was in 2024, Hunter Brown's swing strike rate, but I'm sure it's probably comparable. But Brown does suppress hard contact. His hard hits elite 32.2%. His EV was 86 miles per hour. He did get lucky though. His left on base was 82%. And the BABIP was kind of low at 262. So definitely some luck factors there. And then even for an ace, his Brown's ball rate was 38%, which I think is what Blake Snell's was. And Brown had a 2 or 3% lower walk rate than Snell. So maybe some, he had some good luck there with the walks based on the ball rate. So I will definitely not be having Brown as my SP5. I know that for a fact. And because of that, I probably won't draft him. Not because I wouldn't want to. It just comes down to the price. And I think even it's a pretty solid projection, 200 Ks, 3.64 ERA, but it's definitely not, I don't know. I guess that it could, the ERA doesn't make him the SP5. Definitely the Ks could, but also with the whip being so high, I don't know if the whip deserves to be that high for his projection, I don't believe the Ks will are guaranteed to come or to maintain based on his swing strike rate.
Yeah, I will say, yeah, the swinging strike's always been an issue. You've made a point of that. It's correct. If you look at his stats, but he still has like a 25% or better K rate in three straight years. Like, he strikes dudes out, and eventually it's one of those, he's doing it right. Like, I guess maybe it reverts back in a bad way at some point in time, but yeah, I like him a lot. The ADPs might be too rich for my blood, unfortunately. Unless I go a draft with a heavy pitching approach. He was an SP2 for me in a lot of leagues last year. That was awesome. He's not going to be an SP2 at this price. That's the downside.
So I just want to add, so I looked at his CSW Brown last 3 years. It was 27.3, 27, 28.3, which aren't particularly high either.
No, those
aren't. So I'm not really sure what he's doing to fool hitters so much. What was the average? The average swing strike on my sheet was actually 27.4 across all pitchers last year. Mm-hmm. So he's basically an average swing CSW. Average.
Yep.
And even the swing strike was 11.2, so he's average in both. So I don't know. I know the results have been there with the Ks, but I wonder if at some point, like, I have to look at his rolling K rate to see if it's declined at all as the year went on, but it did jump 3 percentage points from 2024. So yeah, it's just some red flags for my ace that I don't know. That's probably why I don't get him.
Totally fine. These next two guys, it's more injury related. Do you trust these projections? Cause my God, first off, Nate the Great, Eovaldi, we love him. We thank him for everything he did last season. First off, he ended the season hurt. Let's keep that in the back of our mind. And then the projections is for 2026, they have Nate the Great for 175 innings. He's only thrown more than 170 innings three times in his career. So let's just put that one in the back of our mind real quick. 172 Ks, 3.57 ERA, 1.18 whip. Like, the strikeouts per innings, the ERA, the whip, that all lines up. It literally comes down to, do you trust Nate Eovaldi to throw 175 innings? And Ben, I do not.
No, the ADP certainly does not either. He's going pretty late in drafts right now.
Yeah, like 163 almost, yeah.
Yeah, and so using the NFBC page as a reference, that's pitcher 70, including relievers. So definitely getting pushed down compared to where Steamer has him as the 22nd pitcher. It's almost like they're taking how well Eovaldi did last year and just assuming it's going to happen again without there was a reason Eovaldi went as late as he did last year. And it's just because of the health. So 170 innings to project seems like a lot. If yet the great ratios seem to be there now for him. So I get that. It's just kind of like with the DeGrom argument we had last show that, yeah, it's almost like Blake Snellish, because Eovaldi had 170.2 innings in 2024. Then he had 182.3 in 2021. And then before that, last time he hit those thresholds was 2014 on the Marlins.
Yep.
So to project him for 170 seems a little crazy to me, but I think if he's going in the 160s, maybe if he's your SP4, yeah, I think that's fine. But I wouldn't expect the SP2 stats necessarily that Steamer's projecting right now.
Yeah, I agree. I love him at his ADP. I really do, because you give me even three quarters of that projection, you know, pick 160, I'll deal with the rest. Like, we can figure that out and see where it goes. Just don't expect that 175. Same with the next guy up here, the 23rd pitcher, Hunter Green. He's projected for 184 innings, Ben. Now, the 220 Ks, 3.94 ERA, 1.19 WHIP projected. I get. Hunter Green has not thrown more than 150 innings in his entire career, or in any one season. This does not bode well to throw 184 innings.
No, yeah. And this goes back to what that table we talked about last episode, of how Steamer starts out over-projecting innings for so many pitchers, and then they kind of reel it in come March. So if they said 150 innings, and I'd be happy with that for Green, because that's what he hit in 2024. That was his career high. But I don't know. They must still be looking at his 2022, 2023 to some degree, because that's when his ERA was above 4. And he's been basically at 2.75 the last 2 years, and that's in almost 260 innings, which is a pretty big sample size. But it's also come with a lower homer to fly ball rate the last 2 years. Before, he was in 2023 and 2022, when he had that high ERA, it was 14% and 16%. And then last year it was 12%. And then in 2024, in that full season, it was only 7%, his homer to fly ball rate. So he got extremely fortunate pitching in Cincinnati. And his BABIP's been pretty low the last 2 years as well. But at the same time, Green's so dominant. So maybe he can maintain suppressing the contact the way he does because of how good he is, which is something that the projections and the underlying numbers may not always capture. Yeah, looking at his page right now, or his underlying metrics that I pulled up, his EV was 90 miles per hour. His hard hit was 45%, which are both slightly red. And then he has the lucky BABIP and the lucky left on base at the same time. So, but the low walk rate is only 6.2%. So I don't know if the WHIP will get high because of walks. And they're assuming a lot of hits will fall for him, which I don't know. So I think this is definitely one where I think the numbers would be better. I don't know about the volume. I would definitely not expect that volume for Green, but the ERA and the WHIP should be better than what they're projecting for him.
Yeah, I think he's an elite pitcher. I think he is a top-end pitcher. It's just the volume that slows me down, because his ADP is 48. Like, he's ahead of Logan Webb. He's ahead of Blake Snell. He's ahead of Cole Reagans, Freddie Peralta, Joe Ryan. Like, I trust a lot of those guys, even, like, not Blake Snell, but those other guys, to definitely outdo the volume than Hunter Green. Now, if Hunter Green had the volume, he probably deserves to be there. I just can't trust that volume at all, especially at that ADP. It's not happening. Now things get fun. Our second closer off the board. I was talking about it, I think, in our Discord a while back, that I thought Cade Smith is a top five fantasy closer entering the season. I'm actually writing about relievers for the Black Book, and I have him as an elite option. Steamer has Cade Smith as the second closer off the board. Now, last year he had 16 saves after he took over for a gambling indebted Emmanuel Clase. Cade Smith has been one of the most electric relievers in all of baseball in recent seasons, setting up for Clase. And this last year, he was absolutely filthy. He has back-to-back seasons been over 100 strikeouts. He has 95 or more in three straight seasons, which again puts him up in that almost Mason Miller category of conversation, who was the number one closer off the board. Cade Smith is projected for 70 innings, 31 saves, 2.97 ERA, 1.1 WHIP. More importantly, Ben, only 88 strikeouts, which, after I just read his last three seasons, might be slightly low.
Yeah, first thing I thought of was that how he profiles similarly to Mason Miller, and I'm glad you mentioned that in your little intro there. Cade Smith had a swing strike jump from 13.5% in 2024 to 15.7% last year, which is pretty elite stuff. So I think he is definitely lined up to be one of the better closers, assuming the Guardians don't sign anybody. And they're usually good enough where they could support 30 plus saves. I think a lot of it's pitching fields, which I think also could mean good things for Cade Smith, because the Guardians usually have a struggling offense, and their pitching is usually really good. So maybe that means a lot of close games and a lot of save chances. Not that I would necessarily bank on it, but I could see that happening. And I think even the whip is high for him, the 1.10. But I noted last week how high most of the whips are for Steamer, so I wouldn't even pay attention to that really. But the K rate is there for him. He had a 28% K minus walk, which is pretty awesome, and doesn't walk people, which is kind of rare for a dominant closer. So I think Smith probably should be a top five closer potentially.
Yeah, I think he has a top five closer. I think he's going to be great in Cleveland. They don't like to spend money anyway, so I don't see them bringing someone in. I think that's a nice spot for him to land. I'm going to kind of jump around now. Like, Nick Pivetta is next. Again, we love him, but projected for 191 innings might be a little risky there. Johan Duran's after that. He's an elite closer. Not a lot to say there. I want to jump to what Jeff Erickson at FPAS called the best teammate in baseball, something along those lines. And that is Framber Valdez. Framber Valdez, who has an ADP of 92 right now, which is pretty good. He's projected for 188 innings, 176 Ks, a 3.47 ERA, and a 1.28 whip bin. Framber has been one of the more steady pitchers in baseball in recent years. It's been 176 or more innings for four straight seasons, 190 or more in three out of four. ERA below 3.66 in four straight years, basically six straight years if you want to go back. He stumbled a lot towards the end of last season. Got him a 1.24 whip after being below 1.2 for three straight seasons. And strikeouts dropped a little bit last year. Not a ton, just a little bit. Like, overall strikeouts were good, but his ratio strikeouts did not. What's your thoughts on what we're seeing from Framber? First, he's a free agent, so that who knows what happens there. But we did see a different Framber late in the season, and it didn't really end well. So with this projection that bodes well, shows good things, where are you at on Framber Valdez?
Well, looking at everything right now, looking at the dashboard on Fangraphs, the underlying ERA estimators look pretty solid for him. XERA is a little high, 3.75, but the XFIP is 3.34. His fastball is roughly the same. Homer to fly ball is the same. Ground ball rate was still pretty elite. Left on base was in line with average. His BABIP wasn't terribly high. It was 297, a little high, but not awful. Framber's swing strike is in line with his career averages. It's actually pretty really consistent. It was 11.3 in 2022, then 11.6, 11.4 last year, 11.5. But when you look at his, in terms of the league, his K minus walk is only 14.8%. So the walk rate was kind of high. That was 8.5%. Really bad exit velocity metrics. His EV was almost 91 miles per hour against. His hard hit was over 46%. So that all sounds bad. But I think where he's going is fine because he's pretty good for volume. And Framber is the new leader in the clubhouse for the whip amongst the projections so far, because last it was Blake Snell at 1.25. Mm-hmm. They have Framber at 1.28, which is horrible.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's pitcher 24. So you can't be having your SP2 with a 1.28 whip, but I don't think he's ever really had a whip that high. I'm trying to, where's the whip? Whip no, is, it was 1.24 last year, which was the highest in a few years for him. Before last, it was that high was 2021, was 1.25, and Framber's in the 3 years between that were all in the low teens, 111, 113, 116. And the BABIP was a little bit higher. I don't know. It definitely, it depends on where he goes. And I doubt he goes back to the Astros after what happened with the catcher, but I think a lot of, he still has the good value Framber, but I don't know. I think the whip will be lower than 1.28, so that'll actually give him a boost in the projection. The ground ball rate will keep the ERA low, so the 3.47 seems reasonable. I think, honestly, he could end up with better rank than what Steamer has him for right now. I still don't buy the whip being so high.
Yeah, I think he's an intriguing, like, SP2, if he falls that far for you, because his ADP is just inside, like, 92. It's just inside the top 100. So he might be an SP3 for some guys, but you know, if we're talking 15-team leagues, it's like in the top eight rounds, basically, that you're going after Framber right now, seven, eight rounds. So SP2 sounds about right. Now, that's a pretty solid one. Like, he's not going to light the world on fire, but volume will be there. if the whip's okay, it's a good volume whip. As we talk about multiple, like extensive innings like that with a very good ratio is going to help you a ton. So as long as he can get his mind right between the years, which has been an issue the last couple of seasons, Framber should be just fine. Let's talk Spencer Schwellenbach, another one where I do not understand how they project him for 167 innings pitched. I love Schwelly coming into the season. He had an elbow injury, pretty much missed the second half of the year. He finished with 110 and two-thirds innings pitched, Ben. The previous season, he threw 123 and two-thirds innings. Like, the ratios were really good. Strikeout rates were strong. Every reason to like Schwelly was there, except the fact he hasn't stayed on the field. Now they have him projected for 167 innings with 163 Ks, and I don't know how we can sit back and confidently say, yes, I agree, he's going to throw 167 innings.
That would be his career high, professional high, by more than 40 innings.
And his ADP is 15 picks before Framber. Sorry about that. He's going 15 picks before Framber Valdez.
Actually, I kind of misspoke because he pitched a lot in the minors before getting called up in 2024. So he had he had 168 in 2024 total, which is kind of in line with that. But yeah, after being hurt last year, it's asking for a lot for him to automatically go back up to his career high. I really like Schwellenbach. He got jumped up so high, at least in main events last year, and I kind of got priced out once it came time to draft in the main event. But his walk rate is elite. That's going to help. He doesn't have the highest K rate, Schwellenbach, but he gets enough Ks. I think because he allows so few base runners, the K rate isn't going to look that high. But I don't know. It's something with him allowing fewer base runners that actually allows his like K per nine to be better than his K percentage, I think it's something like that. So he gets the strikeouts, not an elite rate, but he's good enough, especially with the ratios being so good. It was 3.35 ERA in 2024, 3.09 last year. So I wouldn't expect 160 innings from Schwellenbach. I would hope for like 130, 150, somewhere in that range. And he's been kind of lucky with the wins. He hasn't had 10 wins yet in his two seasons. Well, he hasn't pitched a full year yet either, so that's kind of part of the reason why. But I like all the underlying skills looked really great for him last year. His K minus walk was above 20%. His xFIP was almost exactly 3. Swing strike was over 13%. His xERA was 3.54. Ball barely throws any balls. He gets chases as well. So when he does throw a ball, they're swinging at it. So I think he's a great. What's the ADP? That's really the question.
It's like 77.
So that's that's like the fifth round.
You have to plant your flag. That's tough.
Yeah. I guess it depends on who my SP1 would be, because I don't know if I'd be taking my SP3 in the fifth round. Maybe in a draft I would be, because I like to kind of be pretty balanced to start in my DCs at least. So I think I'd be in at that ADP. It's just you'd really have to have a really – well, there's no such thing as a safe starter, but definitely not – don't draft Hunter Green with your first pick and then take Schwellenbach, for example. You need someone with a little more track record than that.
And I love Schwelly. Like if he were to get 170 innings, like you have one of the better pitchers in baseball. Personally, he didn't have any elbow surgery. He has rehabbed it back. There's a lot of questions involved there with Schwellenbach. But the way you're describing him, I'm sitting there laughing, going, he's like the anti Hunter Brown. He gets the swings and misses. He does all these little things, and it was just interesting. Basically, everything that Hunter Brown doesn't do for you, Schwellenbach does. The descriptions are pretty close. All right. Pablo Lopez, I know a guy you've liked in the past. I don't mind him. Bloom loves him. Missed a lot of time last year, the shoulder injury. Team already came out early November and said he's fine. He's throwing. No setbacks. Ready for spring training. Again, we'll see. But we've seen this with Pablo with shoulders before. And he dominates. He's scheduled. He's projected for 182 innings, 180 Ks, 3.81 ERA, 1.21 whip. ADP is almost 140, which is very appetizing here. Pablo Lopez, before last season's injury, had three straight seasons over 180 innings pitched. Ben, like at that ADP, I can believe the projection because that's who he is when he pitches a full year. Like, I am very excited about this because I was out the 1 year he had the shoulder issue. He's dominated for 3 years after that. I think I have to, again, this is probably like, you know, being counterproductive to my other comments, but I've seen Pablo do it. And I'm like, okay, I'm in. Let's see what happens. But what are your thoughts on this projection?
Seeing this is the reason why I'd want to draft right now, because I would 100% take Pablo in my first DC if this is what his ADP is. So before last year, Pablo had 180 innings in three straight seasons, which kind of squashed all the injury risk. His ERA is a little high, but at this point in the draft, he's your SP3 or maybe even an SP4 if you're trying to reach. And I would take him as my SP4. I would reach and be like, okay, I'm good for pitching for a while. And it was like a shoulder injury, but it was a muscle in his back. So it was like around the shoulder area that he hurt. So I'm not as worried about it being like a structural shoulder thing, because it was a muscle strain essentially in his back shoulder area that I believe is what Joe Ryan had in 2024. And that's why I was okay with Ryan, because I'm like, okay, it's a muscle. Yeah, it's a shoulder, but it's not as bad as like what Woodruff had, where it was like a capsule or something that's like securing the shoulder in place. So I'm more willing to give Pablo a pass. And he came back and pitched late in the season, kind of like our favorite pitcher, Cole Reagans, did. I don't think Pablo's as dominant as Cole Reagans, but that's all right. He's going a lot later. And his K per nine has declined Pablo's in three straight years, from 10.86 down to 8.68. The K rate, though, the K rate has also declined. It went from 29% down to 23%. So that's a little alarming. The swing strike, though, I want to see how that looks. That's also dropped as well. But the velocity hasn't on the fastball. That's one thing. It's roughly around 95 still. So maybe 2023 was just like a peak year for him, and then now he's kind of just regressing back to his career norms. But he was going like at the 4-5 turn last year in 15s. So if Pablo's going to be in the 130s, I'm going to take him on a lot of teams.
Yeah, I'm quite interested in that price tag. That's very, very nice. It's going to have to come up at some point in time. I don't see that lasting long. So, Ben, you might want to get in your draft later tonight. But, yeah, it's a good perceived value indeed with Pablo
Lopez. Very good perceived value. Very good.
We're going to skip Josh Hader because we know if healthy, he's great. They're saying he's going to be healthy. You can pick that battle if you want. I want to get to Freddie Peralta. We have a listener question after we talk about him here I'll bring up. But Freddie's projected for 185 innings, 208 Ks, 3.91 ERA, 1.23 whip. And all Freddie has done the last few seasons, it's 165 innings, 173. Last year, 176. Ratios, he was 2.70 last year, but 3.68, 3.86, 3.56. So ratios have always been pretty good in the ERA. Whip down to 108. He's had one bad season. Otherwise, he's had great whip throughout his time. Strikeouts, three straight seasons over 200. Four out of the last five of the 195 or more strikeouts, Ben. I've always been a Freddie Peralta believer. Where are you at with this projection? Because the only argument I could see is he hasn't thrown 185 innings before, but he's been pretty dang close. He's upped his innings each of the last three seasons. So I'm a Freddie fan.
Yeah, I had him. Well, I didn't have as many teams that I would have liked last year, but I did take Freddie. I was willing to. And this is definitely one of those projections, I think, where the innings will come down, kind of like we were talking about last episode with the initial optimism that Steamer tends to have with their starting pitching totals. So, and I think the ratios are a little elevated too for Peralta. So I expect him to have less volume but better rate stats. So the 3.9 ERA is too high. I think the 1.23 WHIP is too high. Yeah, he's kind of touched those marks in recent years, but he hasn't been hovering around there every year. It's in 2023, he was at 3.86, and that's the closest he's gotten in the last five seasons to an ERA that high. And the whip, yeah, you mentioned the whips have all been relatively good. The highest one was 1.21 2024. Other than that, though, it's been closer to one most of his career since 2021. So I think Peralta is I just pulled him up on the tracker. He's right, like in that Blake Snell Reagans area. So
he's right next to Cole Reagans, baby. It all comes back to Cole.
God, this guy. I'm gonna have dreams about Cole Reagans.
I should have sent you a jersey in the mail today instead of something else.
Yeah. Santa for the jersey.
There you go.
That's wild. So it goes Snell, Reagans, Bednarz randomly there, then Peralta and Joe Ryan. They're all like at pick 59, 60.
Get your pitchers in the 15s. That's why it's between the projections, just talking like analysis wise, like it's okay. We know Snell's very good. We know Reagan's. We know these guys are all very good, but it's like, I think at least I would sit back and go, Ryan and Peralta, I feel the most confidence in getting me volume compared to the other. Then Reagan's, I think, better than Snell. Reagan's just a question mark, but he did come back and pitch. And I love Reagan's. We talked about that. We're on the same page there. But like, Peralta didn't have an injury last year. Ryan came back, like, was great. It's just an interesting pocket right there.
Yeah, I'd probably prefer, if I had to do my rankings on the spot, I'd probably have it Ryan, Peralta, Reagan, Snell, honestly.
That's where I'd have it, too.
And just like in my head without looking at the numbers.
Basically, a half a pick later is Max Fried.
Yeah, that's a wild time to pick a pitcher.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's a pocket. You can tell in DC's, you know, pitching gets elevated. So, like, anybody listening now trying to think this is how Fab leagues are going to go, it shouldn't on paper, but maybe mains it will. So where Ben dominates, that's where it'll be. But you've done it for 3 straight years, so don't be so calm. But yeah, they get pushed up. So like in a, if we're talking OCs, which I like to play, this isn't going to exist. This, like, they'll be up here, but you're going to get them to drop a little on paper, should get them to drop a little bit, but it's just a point that if you are going to start drafting, you got to, if you want an SP1 or you want two pitchers early, you got to go early. That's your first 4 rounds right there. So plan accordingly is what I would say. Ben's just analyzing, going, okay, this is where I got to pivot. This is where I got to go there.
Well, I'm trying to think because we always talk about the main event creep, and it feels like how much farther can these guys go up?
What I'm saying is even if they don't go up, this seems like it could be main event related. Where it's at right now, where when we talk Fab, like 12 team Fabs, this is not going to exist.
I think hitters go higher.
Yeah, like, just from my experience. Now, just for fun here, let's on the tracker as we have here on the Patreon. So like I pivoted to the 12 team, the NFBC 50s, and you have Cole Reagans at 55, Fried at 58, Peralta at 50 or 56. Peralta at 57. So they're all going right next to each other. Joe Ryan's down at 70. So Blake Snell's at 62. So it is a little different in your 12s, but they're still up there. Like there's a chunk of them still pretty darn close.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of probably SP order off the board, they're all in the same area at least. It's just that the hitter's getting moved up a little bit in between them, looks like in the 12s.
Exactly. All right, we hinted last episode a lot of closers. We already talked Cade Smith. We went past Duran. We went past Hader. We're going to go past unless you want to talk closers. I just want to highlight Smith because people might not be aware of how, you know, as they say in the streets, his game. But moved him up. After Peralta, it goes Munoz, who is the number one closer off the board right now, by the way. Bednar, Chapman, all go boom, boom. The 32, 33, 34th pitcher by projection. Do you have anything you'd like to mention on theirs, or would you like to move along?
Of course, the projection for Chapman is not nearly as good as his stats were last year, but I could just see him collapsing. Yeah. Maybe the walks come back for Chapman, and he's fine, but he's not as dominant, and it's just wild to see him back as the sixth RP per steamer.
Now we're going to start jumping to some values here. We're going to skip Tyler Glass now because he's made of glass now. And his projections, we know he's elite. Just is he going to pitch? That's the million-dollar question. I want to go to Ranger Suarez. He's the 36th pitcher on this board. There's been like 7 closers. I just say he's the 30th starting pitcher, just for fun. Keep it simple. Ranger Suarez is projected for 169 innings, 154 Ks, 3.55 ERA, 1.24 whip in. Okay, that's cool. He's thrown at least 150 innings in 3 of the last 4 seasons, so the innings projection not crazy off. Might see a little dip. In those 3 seasons, Ben, where he threw over 150 innings, he's had an ERA between 3.2 and 3.65. Very serviceable. He's had a whip, though. That's his problem. That's a big problem that he has. Gets decent strikeouts. But why I also wanted to mention this, because this is where the projections might find some value for you. Ranger Suarez right now in Draft Champions, 15-team leagues, ADP, 182.5, Ben. 182.5 for a guy that is right now projected to be around the 30th starting pitcher in projections.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was just pulling up everything on my end, and I was surprised to see the 180 ADP roughly for him. And That's overall pitcher like 77, and here he is.
I just got him like the 18th or 19th round in a 12-team 50. I loved it.
And in a draft and hold, he's so valuable because he's good for just like steady production. And he's not, is he a free agent, Suarez?
Yes, he is. That's might be right. Part of the reason he's down, but it shouldn't be. He's going to sign. He's going to be in a rotation. So that I don't worry too much about that.
It's still up from last year, though, because I did target Suarez at a couple of DCs for this reason, because I knew like he's going to pitch. He's going to have a definitely a good ERA. The whip's a little up in the air. But even last year, his walk rate was below 6%. It was 5.8%. And the exit velocity against was 86.5. The hard hit was 31%. So if and the BABIP was 317, which is a little high. So maybe a lot of weak contact was falling in for him. And that's why I guess the whip is projected to be 1.24, which, yeah, it's high, but
he's had whip issues. That's his only thing. But he's right. A ground ball guy. It's going to like, it's probably going to be an issue for a while. It feels like just maybe you have to bake that in, as bad as that sounds. That's just me who always drafts bad whip. So, yeah.
Yeah, his BABIP has been 293 or higher the last 4 years. He's been above 317 or higher twice for Ranger. So I think that's probably why the whip is so high, because the walk rate has gone down over the last few years for him, which is a good sign. And maybe they're Steamer's seeing the historically higher whips. Yeah, because he was at like 1.3, 1.42. He was 1.22 last year. So I guess definitely at that point, 180, I think he's a smash pick.
Yep.
And with room to be better, I think, based on what the projection's saying. So I think, especially in DCs, I think Suarez will continue to be an awesome target.
Completely agree. Now this is your turn to talk me off the ledge. a guy that I've always loved, and I've felt the second half swoons every season. Did it to us again last year, Ben. That's Mackenzie Gore. He's the 37th pitcher. Let's just say 31st starting pitcher off the board, off this list. He's projected for 176 innings, 193 Ks. I can support both of those. 3.76 ERA and the 1.25 WHIP. The WHIP might be generous on that one because he had he's never been better than 1.35 last season. The strikeouts have been great. The biggest thing that keeps bringing me back, Ben, his ADP is like 218. It's 218. Now, yes, with a whip that's usually around 1.4, it probably doesn't matter what his ADP should be.
I'll say it's usually around 218.
Yeah, but fair enough. But like when you're looking at this projection, and if you're a projection drafter, how do you look at this and go, this is what they're giving me, and his ADP is like 211, 215, whatever I said. How do you go about saying that is not a smash like you just said Ranger Suarez?
Well, I believe last year Gore was going ahead of Suarez. Like in drafts, Gore was like around pick 200.
Yep.
And I just passed over him because of the whip issue, because he had never been a
– Because you're smart.
Well, I see the numbers, Bubba, and I think, that, okay, they're probably going to stick unless something drastic changes, because he was never below 1.4. And I know the K rates – The K rates were always solid. They weren't elite, but around 25% or higher, which is pretty good. But the walks are kind of they're high. They're not Blake Snell high. It's really the BABIP for him, Gore, because he's never had a BABIP against below 309 in his career, which we just talked about how high Suarez has been, and Gore's even worse. So. And Seamer's projecting a BABIP of 290 that shows up on Fangraphs. So they're maybe they think eventually he's not going to be the worst BABIP pitcher in baseball and he'll be okay. And then that's going to drive the whip down 20 points or 10 points, whatever it would be. I don't know. It's tough. The problem with taking him into DC is that you're kind of stuck with him because you can't really add pitchers. You can't probably afford to not start Mackenzie Gore. So it could be more of a challenge. That's why his whip is, I'm comparing his whip to his ADP now. That's why his ADP is down in the 200s again. But, and that's what happened in the main events last year in Fab Leagues last year, is that he was going later in drafting holes. And then once Fab Leagues came around, he moved up. So maybe that happens again this year. And because we saw people like Phil Dessau dropped Gore, and I think others did too at certain times. So I don't know. He's definitely like the classic boomer bust pitcher. I don't even know what we could see in spring training that could maybe think that Yeah, there's nothing. It's nothing. You have to see a season of it, I think, for to buy in. So it's just like a leap of faith, I think.
Yeah, because it stinks. Like we've seen the talent. Like literally, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball for like the first two to three months of the season, like elite. And then it just completely derailed once again. So,
yeah, have you drafted him yet? Guy.
No, I have not yet. I'm at least 99% sure I have not. I've made a point to you try change to that stand. Tonight. I could. That's a great gladiator pick. You can't drop them all season. You're stuck with a 1-4.
It'll be a bloodbath for you or a bloodbath for your
blow body. It up right out the gate, man. Just not even give yourself a chance. Like, wow. Yeah, that's a no, okay, to be fair, he probably shouldn't even he shouldn't get drafted in a gladiator with that whip because he will destroy you because he throws enough volume to make it bad. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the problem. Oh, lovely. All right, we're gonna skip Luis Castillo. I've admitted to Ryan he's very boring but very good. Like, I'm good there because I want to talk about the 39th pitcher projected by Steamer. That is Kyle Bradish. There's a few reasons I want to talk Kyle Bradish here. First, Ben, Kyle Bradish is projected for 162 innings by Steamer. He threw 32 last year in the bigs, 39 and a third the year before due to injuries. He threw 168 and two thirds in 2023. So he's basically going to be 2 years without any volume. Also, they have Bradish for 171 Ks. It's great. Good ratios. All great. Difference between the last two guys we've talked about and Kyle Bradish, though, Ben, the last two guys have actually thrown innings. Bradish has not. The last two guys were picks 180 or later. Kyle Bradish has an ADP of 97. I think the skills of Bradish are very good. We saw it on full display off the waiver wire last year. I don't think I can stomach saying he's going to throw 160 plus innings this year.
No, that's definitely a stretch, kind of like the Schwellenbach discussion we had early. Yeah, Bradish only hit that once, and that was in 2023 when he had 168 innings, and he got hurt the next year. But kind of like our favorite pitcher, Cole Reagans, Bradish did return last year, and his velocity was in line with his career norms. He's basically like a 94.5 mile per hour pitcher with his fastball. He was at 94.4 last year, which is great to see that he came back with the right velocity, or his normal velocity, I should say. The walks seem – his walk rate was higher than his breakout in 2023, but it was below – well, I can't even compare Bradish's walk rates the last 2 years because the sample's so small. But the K rate was 37% in his short time last season, which is probably what's driving the excitement with Bradish, I think. And – he's going up around like pick 100 in the DCs so far. I think the whip could be lower because it isn't. Well, the walk rate's kind of questionable coming back from the injury, but the K rate should be pretty solid for Bradish. And what's the swing strike? Oh, actually, I don't know. He's been around 11 to 10 in his previous three seasons. Bradish, and last year it jumped to 14.6. So I don't know. I forget where he was getting drafted after his breakout in 2024. It's been a while now, but I don't know. He was a huge fab ad, and I feel like a top 100 is maybe a little high for Bradish. I don't know. It's a big leap of faith to trust the durability and also the increase in the strike rate.
Yeah, I love the skills we saw. It's more of a, can I trust it at that ADP? That's my big problem there. All right, let's do a little lightning round here to go through a few. Spencer Strider projected for 161 innings, threw 125 suspect innings last year. People say it's like a year removed from the Tommy John or the brace procedure. ADP is 88. Do you buy the 161 innings for an ADP of 88?
I would say yes, but I'd have to look into it.
All right. Brandon Woodruff, 156 innings, in or out?
Oh, man. God, that's probably out.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think I would potentially draft him, but I wouldn't expect that many innings, I don't think.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like his ADP is 118. It's not even like a discount's the problem. But, yeah, I like Woodruff quite a bit. I know my answer. Matthew Boyd, 183 innings?
No, he is definitely getting some innings knocked off by March.
Yeah. If you want to go deeper on this one, I'm all ears. Shane Bieber, projected for 172 innings right now, 157 Ks. This is a guy that missed most of this last season. And a lot of 2024. He threw 40 total innings before the postseason with the Toronto Blue Jays. Things looked pretty good overall for Shane Bieber with his return. But again, you're projecting him for a massive innings bump, and he has an ADP of 133. Where are you at on Shane Bieber? Because if anything, some of these older guys, I think they just let go until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, it makes sense with Bieber. I think he's on a one-year deal because I think he opted back in, right, or something like that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, 172 innings. His career, you said that twice, 2019 and then 2022. It seems a little high. Maybe like 150 is probably more of a safe projection for Bieber. The underlying numbers weren't the best. His xERA was pretty high, so was his FIP. The xFIP was a lot better though. He had a homer to fly ball problem, Bieber, and he had a he actually got lucky too. His BABIP was pretty low. His BABIP low and left on base was high, so that's going to help with the 3.57 ERA he had. Only 40 innings, but it's good that he came back after missing almost all 2024. So he's going at, so he's pitcher. He's pretty low in the, he's probably like starter 30 to 35 at this point. No, he's probably like, yeah, that's, I think, I don't know if I want, I don't know. I feel like I'd want a better SP3 the way I'm thinking right now, which is what Bieber would be based on the projection. And I think the ADP kind of falls in line with that too, right?
Yeah, his ADP is 133, so he's a top 10 round pick.
Yeah, I probably want four pitchers in the first 10 rounds.
So one being a reliever, probably.
I might actually go 5-5 in a DC.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. The K number, I don't think the K rate was that good for Bieber either. Like the swing.
He's only projected for 157K, so it's not even a K per inning.
It was 12.2, which is okay, but it was a, he used to have a lot higher swing strike before he got hurt the first time. So I don't know. I think he's a lot of name value still, and I don't think the numbers are really backing up what we expect of Bieber. So, but it's not a terribly high price either. He's a tough one.
All right. We'll wrap it up there because there's a lot of guys I kind of want to get some ideas of, but it's all over the board and interesting to see. We do have two listener questions though, Ben. Okay. So we have Martin Sikolsky says, oh, I meant to do this earlier. He says, I like each of your thoughts on Freddie Peralta. We gave those. How concerned are you about the landing spot if he leaves Milwaukee? I am not as concerned.
I need to look at his profile again. Please give me a moment.
No problem. No problem. I just think where he, the way he pitches, I feel like he could pitch anywhere, but maybe I'm just ambitious because I love Freddie Peralta so much.
He has never had a fly ball rate below 40%. So that means he classifies as a fly ball pitcher. So I would say that where he lands would have an impact if he does get traded. The homer to fly ball rate has, what was that?
No Yankee Stadium.
Depends on how he's against lefties. Probably, I don't know. The homer to fly ball rate has fluctuated a lot year to year for him. I think to some degree it would matter, but he does have a pretty high K rate normally. So at the same time, he misses a lot of bats, and I wouldn't worry too much about where he gets traded.
Yep, I still think it's pretty good, and more importantly, he's getting three straight years of 200 Ks. I, you know, I talk about Cease doing like for five straight years. You give me another guy like that, go to battle with that, and I'll take my chances with the home run flight.
Almost ball. 4 or 5 too. It was pretty close in 2021.
There you go. The mailman Mike says thoughts on starting off his staff with Logan Webb, Freddie Peralta, and Jesus Luzardo in a 12-team league. I don't mind that at all, but
that's Bubba's whip all over it.
Yep, yep. That's what I'm talking about, but I think there's a ton of strikeout upside there, and it's a lot of innings. A lot of innings between those three. That's three potential aces on their own team, not talking about in general.
It was Peralta, Webb, and who was the third one?
Our boy, Jesus Luzardo.
I guess in a 15, I wouldn't be as comfortable with that, but I guess in a 12, there's a lot of upside there. So
that's what I'm thinking. You could deal with a lot of upside there, and maybe try to find, I don't know what else you could find to save your whip later, but yeah.
Because they all realistically could have a 1.2 whip, and then yes. That's your first three pitchers, and then you're kind of like, okay, what do I do to lower this?
yes, that part could sting for sure. That's a major concern. But then again, Peralta had that one bad season. Other than that, it's been pretty low, close to one. So let's go back to that.
Right.
Lizardo, you never know what you're going to get there. Probably closer to one, too. I'll be realistic. Webb's also a coin flip. It's either really bad or really good. Like, it's one of the – I say it every year with Webb. People probably get annoyed by now. He's a different pitcher every season, pretty much. So trying to predict him is – the only thing I always say that I can predict with Webb, barring an injury, he's a workhorse. He's going to deal for you. It's just what kind of pitcher, God only knows. And now they have a new pitching coach coming from Milwaukee, by the way. So keep that in mind as we spin it all together there. And we'll say one more time, take advantage of Cole Reagan's ADP. Final thoughts, Ben, before we wrap this one up. And we'll find a new topic for next week.
No, it's it's, like we said, I think at the last show, it's less about the actual numbers with these guys, and I think more about how they rank relative to each other. That's my bigger takeaway from lining up the projections this way.
Yeah, projections will keep changing, as Ben has mentioned, and so it's more so like right now, if you're a projections drafter, you're just using it to research or whatever, just know where it pivots and how you can compare it to others in ADP. Try to quote unquote take advantage of that. Right now would be the, as Ben said, the bigger takeaway from this exercise. But we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm @BDintrick. Until next time, Bench with Bubba, episode 791. Catch y'all later.